welcome to Matron.Space's Polymath Celebration Podcast with your host, Amelia Jane Piper. Now today we are at one of the world's most fascinating and exciting space festivals, all here at the O2 in London. Yes, you've guessed it, it's Space Rocks. Space Rocks is run in collaboration with the European Space Agency and TwinV. It's such a diverse event, bringing both arts and science under the same roof. Now let's speak to one of the organisers of this fantastic event, the Senior Scientific Advisor at the European Space Agency, Mark McCorcoran. Would you like to introduce yourself, Mark?
Hi, yeah, I'm Mark McCorcoran. I am the Senior Advisor for Science and Exploration at the European Space Agency. So my job involves trying to portray all of the scientific things that we do with all of our astronomy missions, our planetary missions, our solar physics missions, but also what the humans are doing on the International Space Station, what we're doing with robots at Mars, what we'll be doing at the Moon, and trying to integrate all of that science together and present a bit of a picture of why we do this, because we don't just build rockets and satellites just for the sake of putting them in space. They're there to do science. So it's a kind of very horizontal role across the agency trying to pull all those things together, and it's always interesting for me because I'm an astronomer and I'm not a biologist, I'm not a metallurgist, I'm not a planetary scientist, but I have to be able to explain that thing to scientific audiences, if you like, political audiences, but also the general public. So it's a lot of work in trying to, for me, learning enough to be able to explain it to other people. But then on top of that, I get to do a lot of outreach things, lots of public talks. Of course, Space Rocks, I'm one of the co-founders of Space Rocks with Alex Milus. And it's so great to be here today after 18 months after the last one and have it all come back together again.
So, Mark, what is the best part of your job?
Often it's cycling home late at night when I know I've actually got my presentation ready for the next day. I think it sounds like an odd thing to say, but it's the fact that I have the opportunity to meet people from completely different areas. I mean, of course, I work every day with people who are space engineers, space scientists, and all of the people in the agency who work around that. So we've got administrative support, we've got legal people, we've got accountants. But in a way, you can kind of get a little bit used to that because these are the people you work your life. It's when you meet people in the outside world, whether it's in the general public, or people like Jason Isaacs, who's here as an actor who plays a scientist on film or on TV, but isn't one. And they will ask questions which are challenging. And you think, well, we're blind. In my world, everybody knows that. But out there, maybe they don't. But that's very important because that then sets the scene for how I can try to communicate some of the complicated things we do to the widest general public. Because after all, it's the general public that pays for everything that we do. We need to be able to explain what we're doing with all that money and with those crazy satellites.
So who is your biggest influence?
Oh, well, there's an interesting question. If you go back historically, because I'm relatively old, when I was growing up, it was people like James Burke, who's a TV presenter, a brilliant science journalist. To some extent, it was Isaac Asimov, who's a famous science fiction writer. Then the Apollo astronauts, for example, I mean, they were inspiring. But if I had to pick one person who has inspired me the most, if I look back, why am I a scientist? It's Doctor Who. It sounds like a strange thing to say, you know, fictional character on television running around plastic robots and all sorts of terrible scenery when I was a kid anyway. Why that? It was because there was that sense of adventure, exploration, the Doctor often trying to solve problems logically, not just by magic. He was, of course, it was a TV program, magic often happens, but he's always trying to approach it from the, you know, how do we solve this problem here? Why are we stuck on this planet with these aliens and what are they after? So and that's been a constant throughout my life. I've watched Doctor Who since I was a little kid, and I still watch it with my kids today. So, if that's an inspiration, Doctor Who is it?
It's been absolutely great to speak to you, Mark. But my final question is, what do you think are the benefits of bringing together music and science?
Well, it's that thing I said before about crossing the cultures. You know, I mean, a lot of people in the general public, they use space because they might have a mobile phone and they use the map on it, and that's using satellite navigation. But they don't know it's there. It's kind of like a magic layer. But they may be interested in music. They might be interested in film. They might be interested in all sorts of different cultural things. and they see science as something which is removed from that. That's, oh, I'm not a geek, I'm not a scientist, I like dancing, for example, or I'm a footballer, or I'm a painter, or I love music. And the thing is that we scientists like painting and dancing and being listening to music, and you know, we're normal people as well. And what I think the most important thing about things like Space Rocks is, the idea is to demonstrate to everybody that the opportunity for you to work in science, for you to work in space, but maybe in climate change, maybe in biology, maybe just being a rational voter, these are opportunities which exist for you, because we're not weird people, we're just like you. We like some music, we like some films. Don't think of us as people in white lab coats who are sort of strange, and I can never be one of those. So it's that, it's the crossing of the cultures. I learn a huge amount from the people who are at these events because of their different perspective to mine, and hopefully they learn a little bit from me at the same time.
So it's been great to speak to you, Mark, and enjoy the rest of the Space Box.
Thank you very much.
So now we're with Alex Smilus, who's going to tell us a little bit about Space Box.
Okay, yes. My name is Alex, and I am one of the founders of Space Rocks, which is it's like an event. It is a way of celebrating space exploration and also the art and the music that inspires.
And do you want to tell us Space Rocks' aims?
Yeah, well, Space Rocks had a pretty interesting origin. I used to run a magazine called Metal Hammer, where I met a guy called Matt Taylor. And if you know about Matt, you'll know that he landed a probe on a comet with about 1,000 other engineers. It was an extraordinary mission. And we got kind of sad about the probe that landed on the comet, because we thought, well, it's just going to run out of batteries and then sort of fall into the sun in like a billion years. So we thought, wouldn't it be nice to do a going away party? And from that, we had the idea for Space Rocks, which is kind of like the same thing. It's like a party that we throw for space exploration and all the people that are part of it.
Thank you very much, Alex. Space Rocks is a fantastic event. But which is your favorite part?
The best part of any Space Rocks that we've done, because now we've done two in London and a few other things as well, is looking out in the audience and seeing young people perhaps being inspired, perhaps feeling like they're stepping into a much larger world. That's how I felt when I was a little kid, because I went to a museum called the Air and Space Museum in Washington, D.C., and it completely changed my world.
Thanks, Alex. It's been great to speak to you.
Thank you very much.
Now we're going to speak with Chris Lintott. Would you like to explain about yourself?
Sure. I'm a distracted astronomer, is usually how I introduce myself. I present the BBC Sky at Night programme. I work at Oxford University, where we try and get about 2 million people to help us look at data we've collected from the cosmos and do things like count penguins and discover planets.
So what fueled your passion for astrophysics?
I was a small kid who looked up at the night sky. I looked through a telescope for the first time when I was 8 at the double star Albireo, which is in Cygnus. It's a yellow star and a blue star. And I was just amazed with that. With a telescope, you could see things you couldn't see with your eyes. And I've never really got over that. The idea that we could work out stuff about the cosmos while being stuck on this rock was what inspired me. And I think I always thought at some point somebody would tell me to get a real job, but they haven't yet. And so here I am.
So you've met many wonderful people, but who would you say has had the most influence on you?
Well, I worked with Patrick Moore, who was the first presenter of Sky at Night for many years, and Patrick was incredibly generous with his time and with his programme by letting me play in it. But he also had this ability to really convince people they were going to understand what he said. I think it's very easy as a scientist to lose people and have them just be impressed that you seem kind of clever. Patrick would say, I'm going to tell you about black holes, and the entire audience would believe that they were going to understand black holes, and that's what I try and do.
So you were the co-founder of both Galaxy Zoo and Zooniverse. What is it like working on two incredible projects?
It's been the ride of a lifetime, actually, and probably answering that question quickly is hard. I've just written a book called The Crowd and the Cosmos, which is out next month, which tells me some of this. I think the best thing about those projects is that it makes it very hard to describe what my job is. Partly it's talking to the public, partly it's doing research, partly it's working with students, partly it's the web developers that we work with. Every single hour of every day is very different, and I really enjoy that about it.
So do you have a favourite Sky at Night episode that you've worked on?
Oh, that's like trying to pick my favourite children out of a very large number. The programmes we did about Rosetta, the European Space Agency mission to the comet, were really special because we sort of followed that whole story. We were there at the beginning, we were with the team when Rosetta arrived, when the little fillet lander bounced across the surface, and we were there at the end. But I think the most memorable single episode was when we went to the Johnson Space Flight Center and we interviewed Eugene Cernan, who was the last man to walk on the moon, and we interviewed him in Mission Control, which still sort of stank of the cigar smoke of the 1960s, and that was really special.
And finally, what advice would you give to any young person wanting to have a career in astrophysics?
I think I'd say don't worry too much about the career. The nice thing about heading towards astro, you're going to do physics, you're going to do maths, you're going to do astronomy. All of those things set you up for a million different careers. So just keep an eye on what you're doing and make sure you're having fun doing it, and it will lead somewhere interesting. I think that's the key thing.
Thank you very much, Chris, for speaking with us today. It's been an absolute pleasure. You're still to do your talk at Spacebox. Are you looking forward to it?
I am. The stage looks great. We just need an audience, and we'll see what happens.
So now we're going to speak to Shahzad Timin, who's a scientist at ESA.
I work as I'm a PhD student, actually, working as a space robotics engineer. Basically, I work on finding out more about the interaction between astronauts and robots, for example, rovers, and to figure out, we're trying to figure out how we can actually learn from this interaction to be able to do more later on the moon, on Mars, you know, and beyond. So,
and what is the best part of your job?
Oh, I love all of it. It's really the cool things. We get to play with robots, you know, and with rovers. I mean, it sounds like, are you guys playing all the time? No, you know, you don't see all the decades of computer screen time we do. But really, I mean, you get to, there's this awesome system that's then built, and then you get to work with it. But the work becomes, you know, quite fun because you're so interested. And I think I speak for most of my colleagues that you kind of, when you're working with this robot, you actually see the bigger picture and know what you're doing it for, and know that one day this technology could be used for the exploration of the moon, which makes it extremely out of this world cool. So I love that part of it.
Modern day technology is absolutely fantastic.
Yeah.
But what are you looking forward to most in space exploration?
That is a good one. You know what? I mean, we have very rough terrains on the surface of the moon. So what will be really cool is if we can have, for example, wheels that can really maneuver quite easily over the surface, because of course we have like great teams at ESA working on really optimizing and actually working on designing wheels that can actually drive on Mars and the moon. But the terrains can be rough, so if at some point we could have these really really cool wheels that can go through really crazy terrains and go like really high slopes and everything, and carry weight with them, that would be really cool. But of course, again, we're on that path. We're working towards that, of course, step by step. But if I could, wish for anything, it would be really to have really good wheels in a really short time.
And finally, are you enjoying Spacebox? What is your favorite part?
Oh, Spacebox is really cool. I'm enjoying that everyone who gets here, everyone who's here, from the crew to the speakers, but also to the children sitting in the audience, everyone is excited about, whatever it is, the music, about space, and all of that coming together. Who would have known it would have been such a perfect combination? So I'm really I'm really surprised by it. Yeah.
Thank you very much for talking to us today. It's
Thank
been
you.
Absolutely wonderful. And enjoy the rest of your day.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
We now have the pleasure of speaking to Tamsin Edwards, a physical geography lecturer. Would you like to explain this a bit about yourself, Tamsin?
Yeah, that's right. My official job title is a lecturer in physical geography, but normally I just call myself a climate scientist. So just a general name for someone who studies the climate, particularly trying to predict how it's going to change in the future.
Now, you undertake a lot of research as part of your job, but what has been your most favourite project so far?
Ooh, probably my favourite is, most people's favourite is usually the thing they're working on at the moment because it's new and exciting. So this is completely brand new, not published or anything. But I'm taking all of the world's predictions from different people who run ice sheet models, so different universities around the world who have a model of Greenland or a model of Antarctica, and I'm trying to analyse all the data together and put it together to come up with one massive uber prediction for sea level rise from the ice sheets in the future. So there's just a lot of different things to think about and a lot of people to work with, but I'm really excited about that at the moment.
Now, I could ask you a lot of questions about your research, but the list is endless, but I think we better move on. So who is your biggest influence? Who inspired you to want to become a climate scientist?
Oh, that's a great question. Probably the first and most important person was my half-brother, Stephen, because when I was young, he used to give me books about the environment, and I remember when I was about 14, really thinking I wanted to go into something in environmental science, something to sort of save the rainforest or, you know, save the ozone layer, something like that. And I kind of almost moved away from it for a few years. You know, I did physics, I got into particle physics, but then I came back to it, and it was like it was always there in the background since I was a teenager from talking to him. He was always interested in helping the environment.
So finally, climate change is obviously having a detrimental effect, but what would you say is the most critical consequence?
God, that's a tough one, because in some ways, you know, what we have to care about is the most vulnerable people in the world. You know, there's a moral reason to help them to adapt to climate change and to reduce climate change so they don't face so many consequences. But in some senses also, there may be the people that we have it within our power to help with money and with, you know, with better infrastructure and better protection so they survive extreme weather events and so on. So actually what's harder is maybe some species that are vulnerable to climate change. And something like coral reefs are very vulnerable to not just climate change, but also the CO2 that dissolves into the ocean and changes the pH, to increases in storms and all the human exploitation as well. And they're harder to protect than people are. So in some senses, they're one of the things that I'm most worried about.
And people like you are helping to open up the eyes of millions of people across the world to change the way we live our lives, to help decrease climate change instead of increase it.
Well, I've been amazed this year at the incredible public support for taking action on climate change. You know, Greta Thunberg and the protests, and all, you know, this huge kind of interest in the media. And so I'm really noticing a difference. We had the huge climate protests and strikes yesterday. So I'm really hopeful that not just the public support, but the media support and the politician support is now finally going at least in the right direction, and hopefully faster and faster.
Thanks, Tamsin. It's been absolutely wonderful to speak to you. And are you enjoying Space Vox?
Always, yeah. It's a great
and
event.
You're just about to give your talk with Tim Peake.
I know. I can't believe I'm going to be on stage with Tim Peake. I'm a little bit nervous, actually. I think, you know, he's such an icon, isn't he? And everyone loves him. So I'll try and do that justice.
Well, good luck. You're going to be absolutely brilliant.
Thank you so much. Nice to talk to you.
Thank you. Now we're speaking to Star Power at Space Vox Live. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Yes, my name's Star Power, and I'm here with my company Zero Central, and we're bringing circus to space.
Would you like to explain a little bit more on the circus to space part?
We perform aerial acts, so we perform up in the air, doing acrobatic tricks, so we work against gravity to stay up in the air and make everything look fantastic. Today we were here with our stilt walking characters called the Wandering Stars. So we were only 3 feet off the ground, so not as high off the ground as these astronauts get up in space, but one day we would love to go up into space and float around amongst the stars for real.
So you'd like to be an astronaut?
I'd love to be an astronaut.
Just being an astronaut in general, or Mars, the moon, where would be your destination?
My destination really is just to float around in zero gravity. So to do a performance in space, to entertain the astronauts, would probably be where I would fit in most appropriately.
And what's the best part of your job?
The best part of my job is coming to different events all around the world, mixing with all different types of people, entertaining the kids and the adults alike, and getting dressed up, having a fantastic time, and, you know, bringing joy to all the events.
Well, it's been absolutely fantastic to speak to you, Star Power, and enjoy the rest of Space Vox on top of your stilt.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. So, Lucy, yes. Welcome to the Majorton Space's Polymath Celebration Podcast.
Hello.
Would you like to tell us the inspiration behind some of your books?
Yes. So, my name's Lucy Hawking, and I'm an author. I write for young readers. And the idea was to work with scientists to get them to write about their work in ways that young readers could access, so that it would be enjoyable and entertaining, and like reading stories, but with real science contained. And when we first had this idea, it was inspired by a boy at my son's birthday party who asked my father what would happen to him if he fell in a black hole. And that gave me this idea that we should write a book about a boy who fell in a black hole. So I went out to look for a book because I thought there must, and there was nothing. There was nothing written for young readers that actually took all the really fascinating and exciting science that people like my father were working on, but put it into a storytelling context.
And which is your favourite book?
At the moment, my favourite book is this one. It's called George and the Ship of Time, and it's the last storytelling book of the series. And in it, my hero lands in the future through time dilation because he was moving very fast. So he's still 12 years old, but he's landed, he should be 75. But obviously, he hasn't aged, but Earth has. And there's been a nuclear war. The impacts of climate change are appalling. There's been a sort of citizens are no longer called citizens, they're all consumers now. And the world is ruled by an orange hologram called Trellis Dump, who lives on top of a tall tower called Dump Tower and exercises his terrible autocracy across the world. So it's got lots of information from scientists about artificial intelligence, about climate change, about the future of food, about the future of war, about the future of disease. So it's asking scientists and experts not to predict the future, because none of us can do that, but to say how their fields of research are developing, what they see coming, so that young readers can develop their own opinions, so that they have the facts and they have the context and they can start to talk and think about how they feel about robots in their lives, for example, or what they think artificial intelligence should do.
So which author would you say is your biggest influence?
My biggest, that's really difficult. I have to confess to really liking J.K. Rowling. I mean, I think Harry Potter is an amazing creation and just an incredible achievement, because it's brilliant to read, it's super fun, it's actually got a lot of very deeply embedded meaning, and also it got a lot of young people reading.
And what advice would you give to any young person wanting to be an author?
I would say, if you want to be an author, then the most important thing to do is to write. That was the advice I was given. If you want to be an author, you must write. Write about anything you like. Keep a diary. Write letters. Write some books. And get used to showing them to people. Get used to showing your work to people and hearing what they have to say.
Thank you for listening to the very first episode of Majortim.Space's Polymath Celebration Podcast. We hope you have enjoyed and cannot wait to bring you the next episode. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter by searching Majortim.Space to keep up to date with regular space news and our events, podcasts and workshops. Keep exploring, aim high, and we cannot wait to speak to you again about space and STEM.